The search for truth never ends. Introducing June's Journey, a hidden object mobile game with a captivating story. Connect with friends, explore the roaring 20s, and enjoy thrilling activities and challenges while supporting environmental causes. After 7 years, the adventure continues with our immersive travels feature. Explore distant cultures and engage in exciting experiences. There's always something new to discover. Are you ready? Download June's Journey now on Android or iOS.
Hey, football fans, are you obsessed with the game?
Oh, yeah.
Do you find yourself looking for breakdowns from every angle? For those who can't get enough, subscribe to Brian Baldinger's podcast, The Best Football Show, where he discusses the top teams and players from around the league each week.
That's what I watched this week, a dominant performance.
New episodes drop every weekday, including Trench Talk Tuesdays with former NFL lineman Mark Schlereth. Make sure to subscribe to The Best Football Show on the Odyssey app or wherever you find your podcasts.
We are in our 7 o'clock hour of the morning shift. It is brought to you by Zero Res. Book an appointment today with Zero Res, Atlanta's best carpet cleaning service. All right, we did hand out grades for the Atlanta Falcons receivers in our last segment, our last block, or hour, I should say, of the show. Now it's time to shift our attention to quarterbacks, although I did want to give you guys a chance to touch on Ray McLeod because we did not get to him in the receiver.
Yeah, I'm glad. I was about to say, hey, can I talk about Ray?
I was thinking the same thing. He deserves to be talked about.
Not only is he the most unique dressed player on the team. Have you seen the Ray
stuff? Best fashion set.
Yes, and he produces music. Like, he's all the things.
I don't want to butcher too much, but like, he goes like this, comes from some type of thrift type, Goodwill type store in like New York or something, and gets his stuff and puts it together. He's always uniquely dressed. It's always great. Like, when we're on the road, I'll be sitting in the mill room and I'll be like, I'm always waiting to see when Ray comes in and what he's wearing.
What he's gonna wear.
But look, essentially, you had three receivers on this team have career years, all right? And you had essentially four offensive players have career years. Now, I know Darnell didn't reach 1,000 yards, but he was close. We talked about Drake did and had 100 catches. Ray McLeod had 62 catches for 686 yards. And to put in context what that means for him, this guy never caught more than 39 passes in a year and never had more than 277 yards receiving in a season. And he went for 62 for right under 700 yards. I mean, he was everything and more, and he wasn't even the guy that people talked about when they talked about the third receiver before the season and the offseason moves. It was all about Rondale Moore.
Yep.
Imagine if we had Rondale Moore. I mean, I hate what happened to Rondale in training camp, but Ray was that dude, and he was that dude from day one in camp.
He really was, and it was not to me, and I think you look at a guy like Ray, smaller build, more compact. I was excited about seeing him in the tight red area and things like that, but it ended up being more about the contested catches, did it not? Like the catches across the middle where he's getting hit in the ribs by the safety or really getting mauled on the outside. I thought he was exceptional. He and I brought this name up a minute ago, but he reminded me a lot build wise of like an Eric Weems type receiver that was willing to do a lot of the dirty work, put in motion, try to block a linebacker, if you will. He was that guy, and he had that grit. And so I think it's worth mentioning, and it kind of falls in line with exactly what we said about Darnell Mooney and Drake London, because I don't think there's any mistake in it. To me, Bijan was going to Bijan. I don't want to take away from that, and we'll obviously grade him later down the road. But this wide receiver core, 1, 2, and 3, was the difference between this team being, average, 8 and 9, whatever you want to call it, middle of the league, 15th draft pick, and being terrible. Like that this group that we just talked about was the difference in all of that to me. And so Ray's up there, man. I give him an A on the year. I'm sure there's a couple plays that he'd probably like to have back, and that's the reason you don't get an A+. For all three of those guys. But, man, for the role he was put in, he was exceptional. Like, I love watching the guy go to work. And you're right, he's got a little of that swag to him.
Moving to quarterbacks now. Let's start with Kirk Cousins because that is how the Falcons started the season. He finished this year with just over 3,500 passing yards, 18 touchdowns. Should I say this one?
Say it, Tiff.
You're going to have to say it.
16.
If you don't, I will.
Interceptions this season. Yeah.
And I think he had 12 fumbles. They didn't lose all of them. I think that was the number. I'm guessing off the top of my head.
6-3
They were 6-7 There were 7-7 with him, right?
Right.
Yeah, 7-7
I don't do numbers.
Because Michael Penix was 1-0 in regulation.
There
and
we go.
0-2 in overtime. Which,
yeah, there you go.
Which
he didn't touch the ball.
Yes.
He said 1-0 in
overtime. Didn't touch the ball in overtime.
Yes. Did not touch the ball.
Which is not his fault.
I don't. This one is hard because this is literally the tale of two seasons. The 6-3 NFC Offensive Player of the Week, not once, but twice, threw for almost 900 yards or something like 900 yards against Tampa Bay. Those were the games that seemingly at the time were for the division, were the biggest games, the most meaningful, impactful games of your postseason hopes, and he was a baller in those games. And then you had the other ones, and you know, he was leading the league in interceptions when he left. I think he might have led the league in interceptions at the position. Would it be a coward's grade if I said this grade was inconclusive?
Yeah. Yeah, I would say so. Huh? I don't know how you can get away with that. How is it inconclusive? We might never see him play another game.
I will say this. For $90 million in 14 games, I give him a felon grade. And I hate to say that, but I don't know what else to say because he went so far one way after. The drop-off is unbelievable and something like I've never seen in a season. But he also brought the off-the-field stuff to this team, and I think he helped some guys mature in some ways. But I just don't know how I give him anything other than a D.
A D minus.
It's just hard for me because he was so good and then so bad. but when he got benched, he didn't waver as far as the leadership from what I saw from my behind the scenes stuff being around the team. And I don't give out behind the scenes stuff because that stays there. But I didn't see anything change about that human being that Kirk Cousins was after the fact of him being benched.
Yeah, and I think he deserves credit for that. And I think if you're giving off-field grades, I think obviously it's usually an A-plus for Kirk Cousins. I mean, he's been a class act throughout. But I'm with you. I don't know how you give him anything other than a D. And I think it would be an F if not for all the highs. I mean, we're talking about a guy. It's going to be funny, guys. It's going to be funny, you know, 4 years from now when Michael Penix throws for 520 in a game. And we're like, he just broke the record for most passing yards in a Falcons game from Kirk Cousins. You remember that 14-game stretch from Kirk Cousins where he was lighting it up for the first 7 games? The bottom line is, you're right, he fell off. The first hint at it was when they played New Orleans, back there in early November. And then you go on the road to Denver, you completely fall flat on your face, and you're thinking, okay, team's tired, got to go to bye week. They somehow came out of the bye week playing terribly offensively. They changed a lot defensively, but you come out of the bye week and you play the Chargers and he goes for 4 picks and you're scratching your head going, what just happened? How did we come out of the bye week being worse off offensively? And I felt like at the time that Kirk had watched something on tape, had decided he needed to make a change about getting the ball out or not letting pressure get to him or whatever it may be. And all of a sudden he got happy feet. He wasn't setting his feet. He wasn't driving the ball. He wasn't understanding what the defense was trying to do to him. And I said this yesterday because I'm going to continue to go down this road. I don't think it's all on Kirk Cousins. I think Zach Robinson did not have answers for what the defenses were trying to do to Kirk Cousins. And I think that had he had more answers or maybe a little bit longer tenure as a play caller, maybe he could have worked around some of those things. But he didn't, and he didn't have that background, and Kirk Cousins continued to fall flat. So I'm in the D range with you. There were some really high highs, but some really bad lows.
But is it fair to say that the limitations that Kirk Cousins brings was like that hurt your answers too? Because if you have a guy that's a little bit more mobile or mobile, I hate being like this, but mobile at all. Sure. You can move the pocket. You can kind of do things. You can run some plays that maybe will naturally create stuff to help build confidence. But it didn't feel like there was any way to do any of that. It felt like it was so limited because you saw immediately the pocket moves with Penix. Immediately. Not
first play.
Not to, and not to me. Look, some of the I was talking to somebody that around the league and played in the league for some years, and I was talking to them about when we had a caller call in and said, "Hey, you know, Michael Penix doesn't put the ball in harm's way." And I completely disagree with that. I think Michael Penix puts the ball in harm's way a lot. However, the fact of the matter is he can, because his arm strength, yeah, that talent, not to mention the guy's walking around with, like, I mean, you might need a dump truck to hold him right now, his testicular fortitude with the throws that he has the brass to make. But he does it because, say it again, Tiff, arm strength.
Yeah.
And so he can do things that you don't have to – your scheming breaks down. You can just call plays again and stuff that you like in your book, and it gets – because Kirk had no – he couldn't throw the ball. He had no zip. It was – everything just went bye-bye.
Yeah, and I agree with that to an extent, dude. But, like, even some of Michael Penix's play action stuff are, like, half rolls. And he ain't moving that far. I think a lot of play action passes in the NFL, and I don't want to continue to beat this drum, they involve pulling guards and finding an extra blocker backside or front side on the play action stuff. That allows you to get a running back out in a route. It allows you to get a check down. We don't have any of that stuff. None of that stuff is built into this offense. And I'm not saying that's bad or good. I'm just saying that with the way this offense was built, when Kirk went downhill, we had no answers. Like, it wasn't, well, let's run this. Let's run a draw more. You tried. You sprinkled it in. I saw, and I can count them on one hand, I saw one draw action this year. I think I saw two wham plays this year, and the running back screens in the middle of the field, I think I saw one of this year. So those things all usually come about when you have an immobile quarterback, and that's what Kirk Cousins was. So, I he's going to get a D from me. There were A-plus moments. There were F-minus-minus moments. But the totality of it, and unfortunately, to your point, is just a fact of the story. When you talk about the finances attached and what the expectations were in that role, that we thought we had 2 years of a upside plus side starting caliber quarterback in the NFL, and you fall short. There's a lot of different ways we're going to look at Terry Fontenot and break down the Michael Penix pick and the Kirk Cousins signing. But the fact of the matter is, thank goodness you had Michael Penix back there in the bank. Because if not, you're looking at a situation where we're going to question ourselves in week 15, that are we going to start Taylor Heinicke? Like, was that going to be the conversation?
The funny thing is if, you know, Terry has his press conference tomorrow, if Terry Fontenot's here making moves in the 2025 free agency class and the draft, it's the Michael Penix pick. That alone will save him at least for another year, because if you just have all these moves and Kirk Cousins and you have your fourth straight year of losing, you don't have a job.
I would argue Bijan's in that category too.
Can you fault them for wanting to win now? That's why you went to go get Kirk Cousins. Like,
no.
There was a plan, and so it just didn't end up working. It worked out at the beginning. It just didn't end up working out the rest of the season.
I don't fault them at all. However, it's mismanagement to spend that much money on one player and not get it right after 3 years of we're building to winning.
If you're in win now mode, then fine. Go draft Jared Verse, who's the defensive rookie of the year.
Yeah, but it turns out it wouldn't have got you much.
You signed to Kirk Cousins. That's if you're in win now mode, that's how I'm seeing
it.
So I don't know. It's hindsight, but it is what it is.
You can do the hindsight thing all you want. I just think two things. I think Michael Penix saved his job, because Kirk Cousins almost lost it for him.
All right, well, let's get back to grading quarterbacks. We'll do Michael Penix when we return here on the Morning Shift on Sports Radio 99 The Game. We are back here on the Morning Shift handing out off-season grades, or I guess season grades for 2024. We're in the off-season now, unfortunately, for the Atlanta Falcons. So handing out those grades for quarterbacks, you guys talked heavily about Kirk Cousins, and you went from being... what was the word you used? Inconclusive?
Yeah.
To then handing him a D. And now Michael Penix. I don't even want to get into Penix stats, I guess, because I don't think that necessarily illustrates what we actually saw from him on the field in his small sample size, but the three games that he started in.
Well, no, I don't necessarily want to go that route, though, Tiff, because I think that you have to include the stats and everything else. Okay. Obviously, there's a lot of upside, right? There's a lot of upside to what he's doing, but I think you have to include everything because part of my grade for Michael Penix, and you guys correct me if I'm wrong, he did miss some throws that looked like easy throws in real time.
And okay, well, costly throws.
Yeah. I'll give it to you then. 775 yards, 3 touchdowns, 3 interceptions, a QBR rating of 50.8.
Yeah, and his completion percentage, I think it's right at 59 or 60
58.1.
Or
58.1.
And yeah. I only say that because I think there's a tremendous amount of upside to him. I think everyone can agree on that. So that's not taking the stats isn't trying to maybe like sugarcoat any – me not doing the stats isn't trying to sugarcoat anything. I just think that we saw a lot of really good things from someone that's just getting tossed into the fire kind of.
I totally agree. I think – I said, and that's what I said yesterday. The 3-game stretch he had to me gave me a completely different feeling than the 4-game stretch you saw at the end of 2022 from Desmond Ridder, because Ridder looked timid, he looked safe. It was like no touchdowns, no interceptions, everything was just like.
Correct me if I'm wrong, because we weren't on the air back then. But correct me if I'm wrong when I say that you just wanted Ridder to be a game manager.
You went 7-10 that year. I think he was 2-2 as a starter, and if you could have, he made some big time throws. I remember he made a throw on a fourth down, and it was Drake's rookie year too,
right?
And he made a big throw against the Saints in New Orleans, and I think that was his first start too, or his second start one, and rips it across the middle. Drake catches it, then fumbles. You lose the game. But, you know, it was everything was just kind of felt safe. Nothing about Michael Penix in his debut felt safe. I mean, he made throws that were just like, did he just do that? However, the biggest thing from the 3 interceptions to me, none of which were his fault. The Pitts juggles one in the air. Ray juggles one. And then the one against Washington was
Chris Blair.
It was Chris Blair.
That's right.
It looks, if you look originally, like, why did he cut the wrong way? In reality, he was held. So he couldn't get out of his break to break to the outside. Penix went ahead and threw it, thinking he would get the call. He didn't. You can say it's his fault, but it was kind of a veteran move.
Well, and on the flip side of that, we just talked about Kirk Cousins, and we talked about the interception streak that he was on, the 1-9 ratio or whatever it was in that stretch of games. I made the point back then, like, none of these looked like they were that kind of play. Like, it was just simply Kirk throwing it to the other team. These were not volleyed plays. They weren't tipped balls at the line of scrimmage by a defensive tackle, even though he had a lot of those. They were just simply balls where the communication was bad, it was a bad throw, it was a bad decision, it was a bad throw across the middle, it was crunch time, whatever it may be. Like, he had the opposite of that, I feel like, in that bad stretch for him. So, yeah.
But the thing to me that really comes back to is the missed throws. He had Drake open for a touchdown in one of the time management situations where if he just puts a little air under the ball, it's a touchdown. And then you look at that was in the first half of that Washington game. You go back to the second half and that other time management situation where they don't call a timeout. If he hits Mooney on that bench route, which he has him, he has him.
Yeah.
If he hits him,
yeah,
you probably win that game. I give him a C+.
Okay. Ooh, okay. All right.
It was close to me for a B-.
Okay.
Because I think he looked phenomenal. But I think where there was missed throws, I just thought they were such a big moment.
I'm on the same page as you. I thought there was a lot of upside, but it seemed like he was really good at the tough throws and not great at the easy ones. And that was frustrating to me, I think. I was going to go with a B. And I think a lot of that, and I tried not to let the upside and how excited I am for the future kind of cloud my judgment because we're grading this past season. But to Tiff's point, you look at the future and you get really excited. But I do look, like you said, look at some of the throws. There were some missed opportunities. He talked about it in those conversations with Dave Archer, and he said, you know, my conversations with Drake were, you know, we're getting to know one another, we're getting the timing down. I think a full offseason will do that, but right now I set at a B in Michael Penix's performance. I think there's just simply throws that he would like to have back.
And I understand I might be a little unfair, I might be a little hard on that grade, a little harsh, but you know, I am so excited for the future that I want to also, and for me, I'm grading it like like I'm Penix, like, hey, I miss throws. I got to go get better at these. I got to get my timing better. And he's already said he's going to already start working already. So I just wanted to be, you know, fair. I thought it was fair and balanced on that.
Time now to go in the huddle. Let's get some NFL headlines. This news just coming out, and I saw that Liam Cohen, the offensive coordinator for the Tampa Bay Buccaneers, the Jacksonville Jaguars have requested to interview him for their head coaching position since they parted ways with Doug Peterson.
It makes sense. I actually liked, in their roles, I liked Liam Cohen better than I did Dave Canales with Tampa Bay. I thought Dave Canales did a nice job kind of, you know, we talked about him unlocking Baker Mayfield or the magic. He worked with Baker. Can he work with Bryce Young? Looks like he probably has, right? Unlocked him a little bit. But Liam Cohen and what he did in the run game down there.
Yeah, I knew you were going to do that.
It was a magician.
Yeah.
I mean, he was an absolute magician. You went from one of the worst running teams in the league to now us talking about Rashad White, Bucky Irving, and everything
else.
But
they went and got Bucky Irving, and that helped a lot.
I agree.
That helped
a lot. But you're talking about the same offensive linemen for the most. You know, Tristan Wirfs is still down there. Cody Mauch is still down there. I mean, these are all the same guys. And a lot. Luke Gedecky. You stayed healthy, and I think that helps. But, dude, it wasn't just like you improved with Bucky Irving. Like, you completely flipped that thing around.
They feel about Bucky Irving the way we feel about Bijan right now. I can tell you that. But take him, Jacksonville.
Not only that. Kate Otten, you lost Chris Godwin. You didn't miss a beat. Yeah. You did some magical things for Liam Cohen. So I don't know. Yeah, exactly.
Go hire him.
I don't know. This is the classic conversation of, is he as good of a head coach as he is an offensive coordinator? I don't know. Nobody knows. Deserves
a shot. Yeah. Go get him.
Nobody knows.
If I could talk to Shad Khan, go get him. Go have him. I want him.
Love to have him out from under us.
Yeah. I had a couple of other major headlines. So Mike McCarthy, I guess the future is still in flux, but it looks like it's probably still going to be as the head coach of the Dallas Cowboys because they blocked his interview that was requested by the Chicago Bears to have him, I guess, try to fill that head coaching vacancy since they fired Matt Eberflus.
Yeah, and this is a proven winner. You want to talk about proven winners? I don't think he's a retread. I think he's a proven winner. The guy's got a Super Bowl. I think he's got over 180 wins if you count the playoffs. This looks like somebody asked me on Twitter as soon as it happened last night. And I said I don't think it's a jerk move. I think they want to keep him back, and they own the negotiating rights for another week. So they're going to try to negotiate with him. Look, if Chicago really, really wants him, and they really say how we want to talk to him before, don't hire anybody before. We've seen these coaching searches with the new rules stuff, that how they go with how they can be interviewed, and a lot of that was the help of the minority candidates that are already on staffs in the playoffs. It'll stretch it out a little bit. So I think if the Bears want to interview him, they still get a chance to, unless he stays in Dallas.
Well, unless there are other reports out there that they were going to interview Pete Carroll in Chicago. If Pete Carroll wants to come be my head coach in Chicago, I'm all over that. You want to talk about not being a retread? I think he kind of fits in that conversation as well. That's Super Bowl winning coach, just like Mike McCarthy.
He's also been fired twice.
Okay, Mike McCarthy would be that same guy as well, right? Would Mike McCarthy not be that same guy?
No, because technically he wouldn't be fired by Dallas.
To me, being let go by Dallas is the same thing.
Right, we got about a minute left here. So
Pete Carroll was not fired either.
If I want to talk about Antonio Pierce, let's do that right now, because he was let go after one full season as the head coach of the Las Vegas Raiders. And I think on Monday during his press conference, he was saying he didn't know, and he would assume that maybe he was going to be back. I think it was something to the tune of that, if I have that correct. But we now know that is no longer the case.
I don't like the fact they let him do a press conference and then fire him. Apparently, Tom Brady is going to be involved on the hiring.
That was going to be the next thing I was going to say, yes.
I wonder how much Tom Brady had in on the decision.
Good question.
And I'm not saying Tom Brady had him fired. I'm just asking the question.
No, I think it's a valid question. If he's going to be a bigger part of this franchise moving forward, you would think that he was at least asked about it. And I wonder how many conversations Tom Brady has had with people inside that locker room, be it, you know, Max Crosby or whoever else, some of the veterans on that team. I think there's probably some inner workings from that locker room that maybe they didn't like, and you know, I think that this is why you went that route.
Sports Radio 929 The Game is your home of the NFL playoffs. Join us for all the action of the wild card round, including a Sunday triple header. Sports Radio 929 The Game is your home of the NFL on Westwood One, and brought to you by the University of Texas MD Anderson Cancer Center. When we come back here, we will hit a mic'd up. We also have Trey Young hitting that buzzer beater to help them beat the Utah Jazz for the Hawks. Stay with us here. This hour is brought to you by Zero Res. Book an appointment today with Zero Res, Atlanta's best carpet cleaning services. Back here on the morning shift, and a big win for the Atlanta Hawks as Trae Young hit a buzzer beater from beyond half court to give them the 124-121 win over the Utah Jazz.
Sometimes you see those buzzer beaters, especially the ones from half court, the 49-footers or whatever we're going to call it. Sometimes you see those buzzer beaters, and obviously it's a swift change of emotion, but the crowd is literally still celebrating as he shoots this shot.
That's the best part for me.
It was incredible. We mentioned earlier, number one on SportsCenter this morning, and it's like, oh, man, what a shot from Colin Sexton that's going to send this game into, oh, my God, Trae Young. Just seeing the faces on the people in that crowd out there, and it was a much needed win. You stopped a 3-game skid. You're in the middle of a 6-game road trip, which has not been great for this team. You were favored by 5 points in this game, and you were without Jalen Johnson. So you needed to stop the skid. Trae Young kind of putting the team on his back in a number of different ways.
Yeah.
This team without Jalen Johnson is they're just not good. I mean, there's no other two ways to slice it, and so it was big they get the win last night at the buzzer beater. But without Jalen Johnson, when you take Trae Young off the floor and you're kind of running the point with Dyson Daniels, it doesn't even – it's not even – functional. Like, this team doesn't even look functional offensively. Definitely didn't last game. Looked a little bit better this time around, but taking Trae Young off the floor at any point without Jalen Johnson in the fold seems like a death knell for this team. So glad they got the win last night, and you got to continue to try to weather the storm here.
It's crazy how quickly Jalen Johnson has become so important, vital to the team's success, whatever terminology you want to use. Risha Shea is still growing. He's still kind of coming to his own. The fact that Trae Young had 20 assists last night, that's the biggest thing for me. This is the worst shooting year. I know he's hitting a game winner. He scored 24 points, and I'm going to say this, but this is the worst shooting year I remember from Trae Young. And I need to go back and look at his stats and see where it ranks in his career as far as his numbers. But 6 of 16, 3 of 10 from three-point land, yet.
What about assist?
20.
That's what I was – okay.
And that's,
he's the best passer
that's
in the NBA.
That's what I was going to say.
Well, I don't remember him – I remember him when he came in the league, and the thing that you go back and you see, and you're like, man, this guy is such a better passer than we were sold on him being, right?
Right.
And it feels like he has remembered that part of his game or re-unlocked that part of his game to where no matter what is going on with him, he's still able to get, the 20 assist numbers. I mean, I the guy's averaging 12.2 assists a game.
I don't think it was, and I agree with you to an extent, but I think you have to go back to some of the offensive pieces that he's been playing with the last couple of years. I don't think he had the trust in DeAndre Hunter in the past that he had. I don't think when he didn't have a Jalen, when we're talking about John Collins, I don't think he had the trust in John Collins to shoot. So I think now that you're dealing with what feels like, better spacing on the floor and better shooters. Now I feel like he kind of feels unlocked. Not that he didn't, not that he forgot. I just think now he's like, I actually kind of trust these guys to be able to put it up.
Yeah, I think he's had guys he's trusted before.
He also understands that he's cold too.
But this is so he's shooting 40% from the floor this year. And just so you guys know, this isn't a rag on Trae.
He almost got dinged.
I'm trying to, I'm like, you ding me, I'll ding you.
Ding.
But this is, to me, I'm talking about his growth as a player and the fact that the growth as a leader, the fact that this team can win, because he's shooting 40% from the floor. It's his lowest since his rookie year, and it's lower than that. He's a 43% shooter from the floor, and he's a 35% from three-point land. He's only shooting 34, but this guy is averaging 9.7 assists a game. He's got 12.2. He's averaging two more assists a game this year than at any point in his career, and that's including last year when he had 10.8.
Yeah, and it's just, like I said, it's a lot of fun to watch. He is the catalyst right now, and he has been for a long time. But simply put, they're just not great without Jalen Johnson on the floor. And watching them try to defend Lauri Markkanen last night, DeAndre Hunter struggled. You started Vic Krejci. That was fine. You're moving Garrison Matthews in and out of the lineup. There's just, without Jalen and Trae on the floor, when Trae has to sit down for a little bit, obviously you're going to struggle. But my reaction last night when Trae hit that 49-footer was, wow. It's which one Wednesday? I led off the show with it. We talked about it a little bit. The NASCAR driver selection bracket moves on ahead of the Ambetter Health 400 that'll be Atlanta Motor Speedway coming up at the end of February. Trying to select a new driver now that mine has retired. This morning, the matchup was between Chase Briscoe and Bubba Wallace. Chase Briscoe slides into the 19 chair, though, that Martin Truex had. All my gears till it's 19, so I went with Chase Briscoe in that matchup. Tiff, take it away for Which One Wednesday.
All right, Which One Wednesday, guys. So we'll just get right to it. Which one is more likely to happen? Kirk Cousins ends up in Cleveland with Kevin Stefanski or with Shane Steichen in Indianapolis next season?
Whew, man, that's a really good question.
I'll go first.
Because I don't think any I don't think either one is likely. But I think it's gotta be Indianapolis just simply from a money standpoint. Right? You're paying Deshaun Watson so much money in Cleveland that I don't know how you could take on. Now, granted, if you're dealing with a situation where Atlanta's playing all of it, maybe that's what you're looking at, but I don't know that I'd want to be a part of what Indianapolis has going on right now. Not that you were any better than them. You finished 8-9 just like they did, but it just seems like, you know, I don't know, man. That's a really tough question. I know I'm getting dinged by Dylan on this one, but that's actually a really good question. I don't know which one would be more likely. I don't think either one's likely, though.
I would say Indy just based on the fact of what – I know that Deshaun is still – I know he had a setback apparently with the Achilles. But I just think money-wise, any money to go, it's going to be tough.
And
Anthony Richardson's lack of staying healthy, and I don't know what's going on with him. You know, he pulls himself out of the game. The growth, I think Kirk Cousins would be good for him. I hope Flacco is good for him. I just think it makes more sense because I think Shane Steichen's coaching for his life next year. I think Kevin Stefanski could be a little bit safer. I do agree with Mike, though. Either one of them, even one of those offensive lines, the way they played the last couple of years, could get him hurt.
Yeah, I agree.
Also, wouldn't you say Anthony Richardson is a rookie? He's still under the rookie contract.
He is,
right?
So and that makes more sense.
Like I said, if they can pull off the Russell Wilson deal where Atlanta's paying his whole salary, then that's
well, they're
that's
not
going to
trade
one.
For him. Atlanta's
yeah, that's
be,
what I'm saying.
He's
but how much are you going to have to pay him is the question.
Well, he's going to have to take the pay that he played for this year. And what I mean by that is he earned a pay, and it ain't the $40 million a year.
Which team is more likely to win the NFC South next year? Do I need to name the teams in the NFC South, or you guys just want to go ahead?
Falcons. It's the Falcons. Look,
this is based on the information we have now.
Right now, well, look, they got to revamp some defense. You have to remember, you do get Braylon Trice back. You're going to have Ray back. You have Darnell, but your offensive weapons are coming back, and maybe apparently we can bring a passing game coordinator in here, not an OC that can unlock Kyle Pitts because it's all the coach's problem, according to 5 million people on Twitter.
5 million.
Yeah, well, like 5 to 6 people is a million a person, okay. So all it's right. Like 5 to 6 million people. Now 40 million agree with otherwise, but or say otherwise. I think it's the Falcons. I think Michael Penix. Everything I've seen, this guy is going to be just unreal, and I'm so excited. I think he revamped the defense. I'm not overly sold on what the Bucs will be next year. Do they bring Chris Godwin back? That's a big role. Do they lose Liam Cohen? I've heard Todd Bowles might retire. I don't know. I don't know. But so I'm going with Falcons. I think the future's bright.
I think that
– and I'm a homer.
I was
going to
say
– Kool-Aid.
I was going to say, at the risk of being dinged for not being a homer, I think it's very hard to say that at this point. Tampa's won the division, obviously, a number of years in a row right now. Baker Mayfield is back. You were good without Chris Godwin at times this year because you established a running game. Bucky Irvin will be even better in his second year. We just saw that with Bijan Robinson. You still have a number of those playmakers on defense, Winfield, Vita Vea. I don't know. Some of those guys are aging out, definitely, and at some point Tampa will take a dive because of you know, the elder statesmen and their contracts on that entire team. But I don't know if I'm homer enough to sit here and say that the Falcons are definitely going to win the division next year over Tampa. I don't know. I think that would be the ultimate homer take. I'm not there just yet. I have a lot of faith in where this team is headed, and I think that we're obviously going to expect them to probably to win the division next year. You beat Tampa twice this year, but man, you got to give Tampa their credit where it's due. They've done it time and time again when you didn't expect them to, and I think that you know, you have to kind of tip your cap to them a little bit more.
Have you guys given your thoughts on who the NFL MVP will be this year?
No, but I have thoughts on it.
So, then maybe I'll give you three options then, which is the three that most people seem to be talking about right now. Lamar Jackson, Josh Allen, and Joe Burrow.
This is so hard because there's three guys that could win it. All three of these guys are very deserving. I have to go with Josh Allen. And the reason I go with Josh Allen is this was the year that everything came to roost. The window people, and those are the people that say,
window's closing?
Yeah. Oh, your window's closing, because they had to get rid of, they got rid of their best receiver. They got rid of some multiple defensive players that had helped that defense be pretty good. And Josh Allen went out there and did his thing. And there are times where I thought Charles Davis talked about you kind of willed the team to victory multiple times. And that is kind of the MVP thing. Now, Lamar Jackson, his year this year is better. I was trying to think of a word, but that without cussing to describe it. But there's not one. This year is much better than his season last year.
It's insane.
But I look at what he has in the addition of Derrick Henry, the maturity of Zay Flowers, Mark Andrews, Rashawn Bateman, both the other tight end that say it for me, Dylan. Now, Dylan's forgot it, but you know who I'm talking about. They have weapons galore. Their defense started out slow and now is playing like one of the best defenses in the league the last 6, 7, 8 weeks. I think there's just more to work with for Lamar, and that's why I give it to Josh Allen.
Yeah, you feel like
the Isaiah cupboard, Likely. Thank you.
You feel like the cupboard is more bare for Josh Allen in terms of the weapon. I mean, remember, Mac Hollins is up there, and that's one of his biggest weapons. Now, they did trade for Amari Cooper, so let's keep that in mind.
But
as
halfway
well.
Through the season.
Let me attack this from the other direction. Why is Saquon not involved more in the conversation for MVP, in y'all's opinion? Why is Saquon not involved in this conversation?
That's a really good question.
The only thing I come up with is that he's around a very, very talented offense. Well, a very talented offensive line.
You got an MVP caliber quarterback, not saying he was a candidate, but a caliber MVP, an offensive line of the year caliber, weapons galore, defense playing very good.
And so I'm coming at the same conversation that you're having. I'm just using kind of different things to talk about it here. It's Josh Allen in the MVP conversation. And I simply think it's a matter of, in a lot of different guys' opinion, who have you watched the most? Because each of these guys individually, if you were in Buffalo, if you're in Cincinnati, if you're in Baltimore, you can't watch each of these guys individually and be a part of the fan bases for these teams and not think they're the MVP. They've simply been incredible. But for everything that, to your point, I don't think if you're just going to give it to the guy with the best stats, then we might as well take this out of the voters' hands and just say, hey, let's let the computers name the MVP. It's just not how it works. It's the most valuable player for that team. How valuable were they? And
so
for me, it's
picking?
Josh Allen. Okay. I don't think there's any doubt about it. I think it's Josh Allen. I think Lamar Jackson, incredible. A lot of different ways. He's probably a victim of his own success in this conversation. But Josh Allen has, when a lot of people thought he would go away, he's gotten even stronger. And I'm interested to see what he does in this playoff run.
Okay, you'll each have 15 seconds once I read this. Which is more likely to happen? Does Shedeur Sanders still end up going to the Titans now that they have the number one overall pick? Because it does not seem like Deion Sanders, his father, who said he would have an impact in where his son goes, is happy that the Titans fired their GM, Rand Carthen.
Development is everything. If Deion has anything to say about it, there's no way I'm letting this kid go to Tennessee. They have completely balked at every quarterback they've tried to sign, everything down the road that they haven't had in so long. It's been awful. They need Travis Hunter.
Shedeur Sanders will be in Vegas with Deion Sanders as the head coach.
Book it.
Ooh, wow. Okay, Dylan, what say you?
Mike,
you ain't going to win this argument.
Bo is the winner.
I don't even know. I don't even know why we have you judge anymore.
I just love how you use me to tell him he's a loser, Dylan. That is producing to the greatest.
Sure,
you can. That is phenomenal.
Thank you, sir. Dylan, you are the weakest link, my friend. I don't know why we continue to let you do this.
Who won? Which one? Wednesday? You can call us for the wake up call 404-726-0929 or give us your grade for Atlanta Falcons receivers and quarterbacks. Stay with us here on the morning shift on Sports Radio 92.9 The Game.